That's our top stories. Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei says the downward spiral of the Israeli regime has started and stressed that Palestine continues to be the most important issue of the Islamic world. People around the world mark International Quds Day in support of the Palestinian cause against the Israeli occupation. Israeli soldiers shoot and kill two Palestinians in the northern occupied West Bank. Those were the top stories. Welcome. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says the downward spiral of the Israeli regime has started and will not stop. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei made the remark on the occasion of International Quds Day. Leader said Palestine remains the most important and vivid issue for the whole Muslim world. Israel is not a country, he said, adding that it is rather a terrorist camp against Palestinian and other Muslim nations. Ayatollah Khamenei stressed that the fighting against this despotic regime is tantamount to fighting against oppression and terrorism, and this is a collective responsibility. He cited two significant factors which determine the future. First and foremost, Ayatollah Khamenei said, is to continue resistance inside Palestinian territories as well as reinforce the trend of struggles and martyrdom. Second, he noted, is the support by Muslim governments and nations around the world for those fighting for the cause of Palestine. All Muslims around the world are marking International Quds Day, the annual occasion held in solidarity with Palestinian people, seeks to shed light on their sufferings under decades-long Israeli occupation. Youssef Jalali reports.
The Israeli and American flags were set on fire in Tehran at this iconic square, which is named after Palestine. A few minutes later, pro-Palestine activists raised the Palestinian flag. The symbolic gesture came on International Quds Day, which highlights the Palestinian cause. The annual event is marked on the last Friday of the fasting month of Ramadan. Every year, the occasion brings millions of people to the streets to condemn the Israeli occupation of Palestinian lands and its atrocities against Palestinian people. But this is the second year in a row that the coronavirus pandemic has curtailed the rallies.
Every year that we come to this event, throughout the world, we are making a difference. So I ask everyone, even if it's Corona, you are alive in the internet.
This year, the coronavirus pandemic limited Quds Day demonstrations, and we gathered in small numbers here at this iconic square to voice our solidarity with Palestinians. Small numbers do not mean that the Palestinian cause is forgotten. This year, Muslims around the world took to social media to raise awareness of the plight of Palestinians. Hopefully, Israel's crimes will end soon.
Quds Day was first introduced in 1979 by late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, who called on all Muslims to hold pro-Palestine rallies on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan. Although the rallies were canceled this year, pro-Palestine activities are up and running on online platforms. Hashtag No to Normalization with Child Killers is one of the online campaigns that's gone viral on social media to denounce the Arab normalization with Israel.
What the cowards in Bahrain, the UAE and Sudan did cannot stop our resistance. The leaders of those countries do not represent their people. Muslim nations will never normalize their relations with child killers of the Israeli regime.
The Israeli occupation began in 1948. That's when the illegal entity of Israel was created, and Israeli forces evicted hundreds of thousands of Palestinians from their homes. Today, around 5 million Palestinians are still displaced and denied the right to return to their homeland. This as Israel keeps building illegal settlements in the occupied West Bank. Now, International Quds Day is a once-in-a-year opportunity for Palestinians to bring their cause to light and draw the attention of world countries to Israeli atrocities.
One of the side effects of the coronavirus pandemic is for the Quds Day rallies to be called off. But activists here say this has opened new doors for them to get their messages across through social media platforms. They say this way, their messages will reach a wider audience to have them learn about the Israeli crimes in Palestine. Youssef Jalali, Tehran.
Lissas, the issue of the International Quds Day, as well as, more importantly, the comments made by leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei, today with Honorable Mustafa Barghouti, leader of the Palestinian National Initiative, who comes to you live via Skype out of Ramallah. His Excellency, it's good to have you with us on the show with me. I'd like to get your view on, I'm pretty sure you have very interesting views on the importance of the Quds Day, but we also like to talk about what the leader of the Iranian Revolution said in his speech today. Yes, please.
Well, I think he expressed the views of most Muslims, which is that Palestinians have to be supported, and that Palestinian issue and Jerusalem issue is the most important issue of solidarity of our time. And on the Palestinian side, yesterday we were in Sheikh Jarrah, the neighborhood which is threatened with ethnic cleansing by the Israeli settlers and Israeli army. And we had a confrontation with the Israeli army, which is going to repeat, I'm sure, tonight as well. But in Jerusalem, what you see is very wide popular struggle with people's participation, with especially youth's participation, reminding the world of the injustice that is practiced against the Palestinian people. The injustice which is reflected not only in occupation, which has become the longest occupation in modern history, but also in the system of racial discrimination and apartheid that is affecting the Palestinians. So our call now for the whole world is to stand up to the Israeli crimes, which has taken away just a few hours ago three lives in Jenin area in the north, and to stand up to the criminal acts and to hold Israel responsible in the International Criminal Court.
Mr. Barghouti, who's better than you or people with, you know, the same background to talk about the importance of Quds Day throughout the past four decades? I'm pretty sure that you also remember, you know, what the picture looked like before there was an International Quds Day, in terms of how it has given bravery, in terms of how it has given awareness to the people of the world regarding what is happening in Palestine. Talk us through that, please.
Well, we'll never forget the day after the Islamic Revolution in Iran, when the state decided to replace the Israeli embassy with Palestinian embassy. And that was a turning point in the history of Iran, which during the Shah time and the Sabah time used to have military and intelligence cooperation with Israel. And which everything was changed drastically immediately for them when the Iranian Revolution took place. And I think since then, Iran has been on the track of supporting the Palestinian people, which is highly appreciated. Today, the International Day of Solidarity with Jerusalem is very important. It's very important to remind the world of the injustice that is practiced here, but most important also to remind the world that the process of ethnic cleansing, which started in 1948, still continues. Hundreds of houses in Silwan, in the neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah in Jerusalem, as well as in other areas, are threatened to be demolished or threatened to be, people in them are threatened to be evicted by Israeli legal settlers. And I want to remind you that most of these people have been evicted already in 1948. From the western side of Jerusalem, and now they want to evict them from where they've been living for more than 60 years. This is a very dangerous moment because it includes the Israeli effort to annex, not only to annex the city which they have declared, but also to Judaize the city and to neutralize the Palestinian presence in it. The Palestinian people will never accept that, but any form of solidarity now with us is highly appreciated, and especially if it takes the form of boycott, divestment, sanctions against the apartheid Israeli system, rather than normalization of relationship with the Israeli occupation.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Barghouti, I wonder if, and I want you to be, to give me an answer for that. This downward trend that the leader of the Islamic Revolution spoke about today that has started, and nothing can help it, this downward spiral that will take Israel down with it, do you see that?
Well, I would like to be that optimistic, but we have to be realistic as well and realize that this is a difficult battle and it is still in the beginning. To change the course here, we need to change the balance of power between us, the Palestinians, and the Israeli side. And in my opinion, Israel is now suffering from deep crisis. The crisis is related, first of all, to the fact that the whole Israeli society has shifted so much to the extreme right, and the policies of Netanyahu has driven them into a deadlock. But the more important thing is that the Zionist movement, which is based on two ideas, one is to take over the land by force, which they have done, and the second idea is to get rid of the Palestinians through acts of ethnic cleansing, which has been successful in 1948, but it's not successful now. It has failed. And in reality, today the number of Palestinians living on the land of Palestine, historic Palestine, is larger than the number of Israeli Jewish people. So in my opinion, the system of the Zionist plan is facing very deep crisis today. And the biggest factor that is blocking this road is the presence of the Palestinian people on the ground. And the fact that this presence is not passive, but rather effective, and because it is a resisting presence. It's a presence that practices resistance against occupation, against apartheid, against injustice, and this resistance will continue. Mm-hmm. This is what characterizes the Palestinian people today, and this is what's frightening the Israeli establishment.
Yes, I would really appreciate an honest answer, and a truthful answer, so far as you are concerned, Mr. Barbuti, to the question of this so-called peace deal that was, deal of the century, I better say, that was signed between Israel and the U.S. and some Arab or regional countries, and the fact that they have started their relations. You put that on one side, and the role of resistance and the culture of martyrdom against what Israel is doing in the Palestinian territories. On the other, if we have these two, which one do you think in the future will bear the more weight, will be more successful?
The deal of the century failed mainly because of the resistance of the Palestinian people and because we had a universal and complete Palestinian rejection of that deal, without exception. Of course, one element of it was implemented with some Arab countries, which is the normalization of relationship with Israel. This was a shameful act. It represented a stab in the back of the Palestinian people. But it is limited in terms of its effect, mainly because they couldn't drag Palestinians into the plan, and mainly because Palestinians insisted to resist that plan. Now that Trump is gone, the chances for this plan are much less, although one has to be clear and say that the deal of the century was not really Trump's plan as much as it was Netanyahu's plan. Mm-hmm. So the Israelis are sticking to it and trying to implement it, and they are using the normalization, the shameful normalization with some Arab countries as an instrument to achieve that, but it will not succeed.
Honorable Dr. Mustafa Barbuti, leader of the Al-Mubadara, that's the Palestine or Palestinian National Initiative. It was an honor to have you with us on the show. I hope to speak to you more. Let's move on. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has urged Muslims from across the world to help free Jerusalem al-Quds from the Israeli occupation using whatever means they have at their disposal. Hamas said a battle is ongoing in the city as the Israeli regime and its settlers are committing assaults there. It also called on other resistance groups in the Gaza Strip to mobilize forces to make the regime realize a robust shield defending the holy city. Hamas called the latest Israeli effort to occupy the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood futile, saying Palestinian men and women in the area remain resolute not to abandon their ancestral land. The neighborhood in East Jerusalem al-Quds has seen days of intense clashes after an Israeli court issued an eviction order for dozens of Palestinian families as part of the regime's land grab policy. Yemenis have held a symposium in the capital, Sana'a, to highlight the importance of the Palestinian cause among the people of the war-torn country. It was held as part of events to mark the International Quds Day in support for Palestinians against the Israeli aggression. Abdul Latif al-Washali is in the Yemeni capital.
The Palestinian cause, between interaction and disappointment, is the slogan of this symposium held in the Great Mosque of Yemen's capital, Sana'a, to raise awareness on the importance of the Palestinian cause among Yemenis. A number of state officials participated in the symposium.
The International Quds Day is an important occasion to remind the Islamic nations of the Palestinian cause. We call on the Islamic world to take steps to liberate Al-Aqsa Mosque from the Israeli occupation amid the continued acceleration of some Arab regimes to normalize ties with the Israeli regime.
The participants affirmed that the Palestinian cause will remain the central issue of the Islamic nations despite the betrayal of some Arab regimes. They said Muslims should get united to help Palestinians to liberate their territories from Israeli occupation, especially the holy city of Jerusalem, Al-Quds.
For the Yemenis, the Palestinian cause is not restricted to the Palestinians alone. As Imam Khomeini said, we should prepare ourselves for the military step to eradicate the cancerous gland of Israel from the region.
The International Quds Day was initiated by late founder of the Islamic Republic to express support for the Palestinians and oppose Zionism and Israel.
Yemenis believe that the Palestinian cause is a global issue that requires all the free people of the world to stand by the Palestinians until the liberation of their occupied lands. Abdul Latif al-Washali from the Great Mosque of Sana'a.
Israeli forces have shot and killed two Palestinians in the northern occupied West Bank. Another Palestinian was critically wounded as well. That is according to Israeli media citing a police official. Media reports say the three Palestinians had guns and fired shots at the Salem police base. They say Israeli forces responded with gunfire. No Israeli casualty has been reported. Palestinians have not commented yet. Israeli soldiers frequently target Palestinians in the occupied territories. They cite different reasons and excuses and accuse the Palestinians of trying to harm their soldiers. And that's it with international news.
قضیه فلسطین از یادها نخواهد رفت و شهر مقدس بیت المقدس پایتخت فلسطین باقی خواهد ماند و قبله اول مسلمان ها برای مسلمان ها باقی خواهد ماند.
The issue of occupied Palestine will never be forgotten. The holy city of Beit al-Muqaddas will remain forever the capital of Palestine. And the first Qibla of Muslims will always be there for Muslims. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
People who limit the Quran to worshipping and personal matters haven't understood it. This is a part of a speech delivered on April 14, 2021 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, at the annual Ramadan Quranic meeting. The speech was delivered via video conference with the participation of a number of prominent Quranic reciters.
The Quran encompasses all the corners and angles of human life. This ranges from the spiritual transcendence and perfection of humanity, the highest need for humanity and the highest request that humanity has in benefiting from spiritual transcendence, closeness to God, divine understanding and divine kindness. Bestow upon me the perfection to separate from everything and to join you and enlighten the eyes of our heart with the light of seeing you. To the management of human societies, the administration of justice and managerial approaches for running human societies. We could also refer to the elimination of different enmities as another area that Quran touches on. Internal and external enemies, and enemies from among humans and from among jinns, as well as jihad and striving. Respond to evil with what is best. Then the one you are in a feud with will be like close friend. Chapter 41, verse 34.
فيك الحب زاد عما العباد يا خير زاد رمضان يا شهر القرآن فيك أذوق حلاوة الإيمان لا لا تنقضي أنت للروح دواء رمضان ليتك دوما قريب
Another area we can mention is morality and family. And those who pray, O Lord, grant unto us wives and offspring, who will be the comfort of our eyes. Chapter 25, verse 74. Another ayah in this regard is, marry those among you who are single, or the virtuous ones among yourselves, male or female. If they are in poverty, Allah will give them means out of His grace. Chapter 24, verse 32. The education of children and the issue of tranquility and psychological calm are other areas addressed by the Quran. Psychological calm is one of the most important needs of humanity. Allah sent down His tranquility to His messenger and to the believers. Chapter 48, verse 26.
Alhamdulillah, Alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah. Alhamdulillah, Alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
Ministry.
Iraqi Kurds, long accused of covert cozy ties with Zionist Israel, are watching on with amazement as Israel befriends allegedly hostile Arab countries. Normalization between Arab countries and Israel are changing geostrategic realities for them. After the occupation arrived in 1948 and as Arab hostility toward constant Israeli aggression intensified, the occupying entity tried to reach out to non-Arab communities in West Asia. It found an opening with Iraq's Kurds, who had a dream to separate from the central government in Baghdad. Israel then sought to provide military support to Kurds who were fighting Saddam Hussein's military campaigns in the north throughout the 1980s and the 1990s. In 2017, Israel backed a controversial independence referendum in northern Iraq, even as Erbil's allies, including the United States, opposed the vote. And now, as the Kurds watch several states normalizing with the region's historic foe Israel, they feel eager to take their relationship with Israeli intelligence and occupation forces out to the open, but they cannot do it on their own. They need Iraq to do it first, since Baghdad manages foreign policy. If an Israeli embassy opens in Baghdad tomorrow, the day after, an Israeli consulate will be opened in Erbil. This is what KRG officials openly say. However, the Iraqi resistance has a different opinion. Regional media reported last week that an Israeli Mossad outpost came under attack in northern Iraq Tuesday, April 13 at night, and that a senior Israeli intelligence agent was killed while several other Mossad agents were wounded. Such incidents, along with the constant attacks against U.S. occupation forces in Erbil Airport, puts leaders of the KRG at a hot spot for not being able to keep their regions away from harm's way by engaging in unholy alliances with Iraq's main foes, Israel and the U.S. By supporting Kurdish separatism, Israel hopes to steer the region in a new direction and by extension encourage other ethnic and religious groups in the region to seek to emulate the Kurdish example. By deliberately seeking to dismantle the existing multi-ethnic, multicultural, and multi-religious nation-states, Israel's quest to be recognized as a purely Jewish state would no longer be an aberration, or so it hopes. But we already know that it is not going to happen as long as the region's resistance is alive and capable. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. The Kurds are fond of saying that they have no friends but the mountains. Yet one entity has pushed for their separation from both Iraq and Syria over many decades, Israel. The relationship between the two has evolved to the point where Israel is the only voice in West Asia encouraging rather than decrying the Kurdistan's separation from Iraq. Netanyahu first publicly voiced support for an independent Kurdish state in June 2014 as the threat of Daesh was rising. However, that fantasy was blocked by the Iraqi resistance's elimination of Daesh, ridding the Kurdish Contras from Daesh threat. Yet Kurdish separatists still choose Israel over the resistance any day. To discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Laith Maruf, political commentator. Thank you for being with us, Laith. Now, this is a very interesting topic here, specifically that the leaders of northern Iraq's Kurdistan regional government are always happy to receive Israeli support, given the international opposition to the Kurdish plans to disintegrate from Iraq. We have Kurdish leaders who could not openly celebrate their Israeli encouragement for fear of repercussions from the rest of Iraq, who link aspirations for Kurdish independence with the ideology of Zionism itself, which we have been seeing for the past 72 years. In what ways do you think the Kurdish separatists believe Israel can actually benefit their demands?
It's the same delusion that many before the Kurds have fallen into, and well, here we're talking about a small minority that is requesting the support of an imperialist against its own region. And we remember what happened to the indigenous tribes in Mexico when they sided, some of them, with the Spanish invaders against the Aztecs. And obviously the Spanish, as soon as we're done with the Aztecs, eliminated and ethnically cleansed those indigenous small tribes. And so it's a delusion for any person to side with imperialists against the people of his region, his or her region. And there's never been in history that this ended well. And it seems like the elite in the Kurdish people have not learned from history.
Well, the Kurdish regional government released an official statement last week on Wednesday denying certain reports that were present in the media, especially in the regional media, claiming that there were unknown forces that attacked a certain area, and which is a Mossad facility in the KRG, and it killed Israelis in northern Iraq. Now, at the same time, we have attacks on U.S. Bases all across Iraq, especially those who are stationed in Kurdistan, and now possible attacks against Mossad agents as well. What will be the result of such constant upheaval in northern Iraq that was once safer than actually Baghdad?
You see, the result will be continued fighting in the region. As long as the Kurds do not reconciliate with their surrounding, with their brothering and cousins in Iran, in Turkey, in the Arabic world, they will continue to be played by imperialist and apartheid Israel for the goals of not achieving them peace or stability or independence, but to undermine their brothers and neighbors. That's the ultimate goal that apartheid Israel is working on. That's the ultimate goal of the United States involvement in Iraq and Syria on the side of the Kurds. It is not for their betterment, it's for the detriment of everybody else around them, which means they will also, their house will be burning down with their surrounding. You know, you look at what's happening in North Iraq right now with the ethnic cleansing of Nineveh, of the Babylonian and Assyrian and Syriac and Arab peoples of that region, and after the invasion of ISIS and the Wahhabi Contras, and how these Kurdish Contras themselves actually, instead of after the defeat of ISIS in that region, allowing the people of the indigenous populations of that region to come back, have taken it over and included it in their fake new independent province or area of Iraq. So we have now Kurds that are encroaching on the traditional lands of Semitic people, Assyrians, Babylonian, and Arab, and this will not end well.
Well, this sort of covert relationship between both the Kurdish side and the Israeli side began when the Ba'ath Party was still in power between 1968 and 1975. Was the most where they shared intel, and even Israel gave weapons to Kurdistan to fight off at that time Saddam Hussein. But we had Mustafa Barzani, the father of the current president of the KRG, Masoud Barzani. He was leading a rebellion against the Iraqi regime at that time. Now, Israeli security and intelligence agents help the Kurds with military assistance and with also arms. What benefits Israel from this relationship, obviously, other than having a foot inside of Iraq? What can they benefit from a disintegrated region?
You see, the goal of apartheid Israel in the Western Asia and North Africa, one of their main goals since the creation of Zionism, is to cut off the rivers that feed the Arab people. We're here talking about the Euphrates and the Tigris and the Nile. And so you look at how the relationship between apartheid Israel, Turkey, and Ethiopia are very important into holding our people down. And, you know, and as we see right now in Egypt, the situation is deteriorating. You know, building this dam in Ethiopia will basically starve the people of Egypt. And here is the same thing happening in the Levant. The Turks built, 40-somewhat dams on the Euphrates and Tigris, and now the Kurds are coming to steal the lands that are the part of the Fertile Crescent that fed the Arab and the Semitic people for 40,000 years, you know, the land between the two rivers. So the aim here is to cut off the Arabic people from their ability to feed themselves, because that's one of the things that have kept the Arab people independent and able to resist imperialism and occupation for 20,000 years.
Well, given the past 10 years of war against terrorism in the region waged by the resistance against imperial powers who implanted hostile terrorists, Wahhabi-funded insurgents and Westerns won in the region in total, especially in Iraq and in the areas controlled by the Kurds as well in northern Iraq, they suffered a lot until the Iraqi resistance led by both martyrs, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis and Qasem Soleimani, went to help out, especially in Kirkuk, and rid the area of Daesh. Why is it so hard for the leaders of the KRG to accept that and to take a firm stance alongside the resistance, the Iraqi resistance, whom they share with the land, the sky, the nation, the pride?
Well, you know, unfortunate for the Kurdish people that they are cursed with such leadership that cannot even acknowledge a favor that was done to them and the saving of the Kurdish people in Iraq from these Wahhabi contras that would have, you know, kidnapped and raped and all their children and women and killed their men if they were able to. So, you know, we know that the Kurdish people is different than their elite, and their elite, unfortunately, are corrupted to the bone, where their care is not about protecting their people. It's about stealing as much money as possible through the looting of the Iraqi oil, now the Syrian oil also, and taking all the money that comes in from the West and the weapons. And, you know, so you look at what's happening in Kurdistan, Iraq, and the disparity between this political elite and the people on the ground is huge. And ultimately, the hope is that there will be new movements within the Kurdish people that will, you know, push these elites out that are collaborating with imperialists.
Well, that remains to be seen as how the region is actually beginning to look like one which is waiting for fire to happen, or rather diplomacy to work throughout its sway. I want to thank you very much, Laith Maarouf, for being with us, political commentator in Beirut, to talk about the relationship between Israel and the Kurds of Iraq. Now, please stay tuned. Next, we will be talking about how the U.S. bases in Iraq are being shot one after the other.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marwa Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
Another military base hosting U.S. troops in Iraq was targeted with drones carrying explosives on Wednesday morning, ending any illusions that President Joe Biden's strike on Iraqi resistance soldiers inside Syria would deter such retaliatory attacks. Now, no casualties were reported in the attack on the airport in Erbil, which doubles as a base for U.S. troops. Now, before U.S. occupation troops shook off the Erbil attack, another one hit them on Friday in the Ain al-Assad base located in the Anbar governorate of western Iraq. U.S. occupation bases under heavy fire across Iraq in this following report.
Renewed drone attacks on U.S. targets in Iraq show that the Iraqi resistance is keen on ridding its nation from U.S. occupation, as U.S. pressure on the government in Baghdad is heaping, while Biden seeks leverage over the Iraqi official decision to see the U.S. leave their country once and for all. Iraq, scarred by decades of U.S. invasion, war, and Western-backed terrorism, has been a strategic location for the U.S. occupation to face off with its main foe, Iran, while making sure that the Iraqi popular choice of resistance be suppressed. The resumption of retaliatory attacks against U.S. occupation bases in Iraq shows that the Iraqi resistance are now abandoning de-escalation and seeking leverage over their rivals. It seems we're back to last year when, for several months in 2020, rockets rained down on American sites once a week or more. However, this time, not only in Anbar or Baghdad, but also in northern Iraq's Kurdistan region. A drone dropped explosives targeting U.S. occupation forces stationed at Erbil Airport in northern Iraq late on Wednesday, April 14, with no reports of casualties. However, a separate rocket attack killed a Turkish soldier at a military base nearby. It was the first known attack carried out by an unmanned aerial drone against U.S. forces in Erbil, amid a steady stream of rocket attacks on bases hosting U.S. occupation forces and their embassy in Baghdad that Washington blames on what it calls Iran-backed militias. The U.S. still cannot fathom the thought that Iraqis have every right to defend their land, especially after their tragic history of the American invasion, occupation, theft, and embedding Tekfiri terrorism. Shortly before Wednesday's attack in Erbil, at least two rockets landed on a base to the west of the city that hosts Turkish forces, killing a Turkish soldier. Turkey also has troops in Iraq, both as part of a NATO contingent and a force that has attacked Kurdish separatist militants in the north. The Iraqi resistance had already expressed its opposition to the presence of the United States and Turkey and demand a full withdrawal of all foreign troops. But since all their words went unheard, they sought a louder form of expression, which definitely got the attention of all foreign occupation forces in Iraq. Now to discuss this issue with us from Malmo is Firas Ali, political commentator. Thank you for being with us, Firas. Now, Iraqi resistance factions have upped the stakes with drone attacks against U.S. occupation forces inside of Iraq, a technique which is actually favored elsewhere in West Asia, and it seems to be affordable, yet very accurate and very effective. Are we at a crossroad for the U.S. illegal presence in Iraq, or maybe is this the storm before the actual big explosion that might happen?
The Iraqi resistance has chosen a very strategic offensive against the U.S. occupation. This choice is very accurate and it doesn't risk Iraqi civilians' lives, neither through their own action or through rough and disproportionate reactions from the U.S. occupation. It's enough headache and damage for the civilian Iraqis that their lives are endangered by the U.S. air missile defense system that they use around the U.S. embassy in Baghdad, because usually, and it's very often actually, that shrapnel from that missile defense system drops down on civilian houses and damages it. The Iraqi resistance are therefore slowly choking the occupation, and this will make them bleed to death. A big explosion could occur if the Americans make a stupid mistake, like, for example, a bigger operation against the resistance. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't seem to be in the planning, at least not openly. I think the Americans would instead certainly prefer pushing Iraqi security forces against the resistance, and thus both having an internal fight and getting a pause from the attacks. Hopefully that won't happen.
Well, Firas, the U.S. has been planning to leave Baghdad, especially the Green Zone in Baghdad, and move north towards Erbil, away from the constant attacks by certain Iraqi groups that don't really name themselves or give a bit of a vague name for themselves. Yet they now find themselves being attacked, and people are following them up there and attacking them because they are not welcome in Iraq. What are the U.S. options when it comes to dealing with such specific drone attacks?
The Americans have only one option, Mama. Let's make use of their favorite phrase, as we got to use it. Although it was a long time that they used it themselves, they used to say that all options are on the table. I think the Iraqi resistance are telling the Americans now, you have only one option on the table, and that's leaving Iraq. It doesn't matter where in Iraq you move, we will follow you there. If they don't leave Iraq, they will have to face the consequences. As you mentioned, we've seen in the region, and especially in the U.S.-backed Saudi war on Yemen, the U.S. defense system can't protect the kingdom from this kind of kamikaze drones, regardless of how expensive or the state of the art they are. This is actually making the Americans very irritated. Expensive defense system can't protect them against cheap but effective drones. Mm-hmm. And the use of drones are probably even safer for the Iraqi resistance than missiles, because they can send them from a distance without a bigger security setup, and they don't leave any traces.
Well, politically, the U.S. keeps poking at the Iraqi government, at Qadhimi's government, after every attack it faces inside of Iraqi territories. Despite the fact that the Iraqi parliament considers the Iraqi resistance part of the Iraqi army since 2017, and so basically when the U.S. targets the Iraqi resistance, it is basically targeting the Iraqi army itself. Where does Qadhimi's government stand on this very crucial matter?
Well, it seems that the interim government of Qadhimi are trying to balance between the occupation and the request of the parliament, which in fact is the wish of the Iraqi people. The government is actually engaged in a dialogue with the representatives of the United States of America in Iraq. They're talking about the withdrawal, but regardless, the Iraqi people are receiving mixed signals. The interim government said that the troops will leave, but spokesman for the occupation army says another thing. Sometimes they're talking about moving north to northern Iraq, and sometimes you can hear the Secretary General of NATO saying that they will replace the U.S. occupation. So it's hard to know who is the honest guy here in the room. But U.S. forces have decreased in Iraq, and that's a fact. But I don't think it's because of the dialogue. I think it's because of the security concerns they have amid the ongoing attacks.
Well,
but that's not enough.
We have seen once again that the Iraqi file is pressing the Biden administration to make some sort of a firm stance towards its presence, its troops' presence inside of Iraq. It's illegal. Presence inside of Iraq, but Biden seems preoccupied these days, maybe with internal affairs or rather with Iranian JCPOA agreements that are going on or negotiations that are underway in Vienna as well. Can it be that the Iraqi events are also tied from an American point of view? They are tied to the Iranian deal as it is being propagated by the Western mainstream media that propagates everything that goes on in the White House.
I personally don't think that. It's true that Iran has evolved to a regional power, but it's far-fetched to attach everything in the region to the Iranian nuclear file. They say this every time there's an issue in the region, regardless of it, if it's about Lebanon, Yemen, or Iraq. But it's far from true. Unlike USA, Iran have allies which are connected to it ideologically, but they are very independent. Thus, they are acting with this independence, and that's why the Iraqi file is not connected at all to the nuclear file, the Iranian nuclear file.
Mm-hmm.
And the United States will sooner or later realize that, that they need to listen to the Iraqi people, and there's only one solution to the Iraqi file. Leave Iraq and period.
Well, there's one more file that the U.S. has not used, or maybe option that the U.S. has not used against the Iraqi people, which it had used against Yemen, against Syria, and against Lebanon, and that's sanctions. Do you think that might be one of the options on the table, and how do you think that would affect the internal economy and social fabric of Iraq?
Of course, that could be something that the United States will use as a B card, as a plan B. And if they use it, it will be a disaster to the Iraqi economy and to the Iraqi nation, because Iraq has already problems with the economy, and the oil is not at that price that they used to have it before. So it could be the situation could become like it's in Syria if they imply the sanctions.
So do you think that is actually one of the options that would maybe bend the arms of the Iraqi government?
Definitely, because when the United States of America are not able to reach its goals with military way, they go to the sanctions.
They go to the sanctions, and that basically is what the Iraqi government maybe is afraid of, but at the same time, it shows that it is working against the maybe benefit and the demands of the Iraqi resistance. And that was the fear mainly when I ask a lot of my Iraqi friends about it internally. They say that they fear for the future of the Iraqi resistance. Do they have anything to really be afraid of?
I don't think that they need to be afraid of that, because before Ghazni came to power, the Iraqi Prime Minister and government of Mr. Abdel Mahdi, they traveled to China and they made an agreement with China to sell approximately 100,000 barrels of oil a day for China's investment in Iraq. And now Ghazni is giving about 200,000 barrels of oil in a day in the new deal he made with Jordan and Egypt. So Iraq, as with the case of Iran, they have a window to the east, to China, so they don't need to be afraid of the U.S. sanctions.
Mm-hmm. But yet the Iraqi government seems to be more than willing to abide by the demands of the Biden administration in fear that it might fall under certain sanctions or even more pressure. We still don't know what kind of pressure that the U.S. will be using against whether the Khatami administration or government in Iraq or the targets that it might hit the Iraqi resistance. But the Iraqi resistance has shown so far that it is not silent. It has a loud voice. It will target any occupying force all across Iraq, until their land is liberated. I want to thank you very much, Firas Ali, for being with us from Malmo to talk about how the U.S. is being targeted inside of Iraq and what options do both sides have. Thank you for being with us. And please stay tuned, because next week we have more news right here on the Mideast Stream.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Subhanallah, walhamdulillah, la ilaha illallah, wallahu akbar, la ilaha illallah.
Let's listen to the famous reciters of the Holy Quran in the month of Allah. Brother Muhammad Reza Biria, only in IRIB English Radio.
Assalamu alaikum, brothers and sisters. Welcome to this segment of the month of Allah. We're going to talk about some famous reciters of the Quran in this segment of the show. One of the famous reciters from Egypt, which a lot of people know, is Sheikh Raghib Mustafa Ghalwesh. This great reciter was born in 1938 in the Gharbiya Governorate of Egypt. Gharbiya Governorate is a place in the west of Egypt. Many great reciters were from this governorate, including Mustafa Ismail and also Sheikh Muhammad Abdul Aziz Hassan. And it's interesting that all three of these reciters recited the Quran similarly, with a similar style. Sheikh Raghib Mustafa Ghalwesh memorized the whole Quran when he was a teenager. When he was 16, he would recite the Quran in gatherings. And when he was just 24 years old, he entered the Egyptian radio. That's how qualified a reciter he was. For a long time, Sheikh Raghib Mustafa Ghalwesh followed the style of Sheikh Mustafa Ismail. There's an interesting memory from Sheikh Mustafa Ismail about this. Sheikh Mustafa Ismail says that once he was listening to the radio and someone was reciting the Quran. Sheikh Mustafa Ismail said to himself, "I don't remember where I recited this recitation." And he was thinking to himself. And then he was told that this was actually Sheikh Raghib Mustafa Ghalwesh who is reciting the Quran, not Sheikh Mustafa Ismail. That's how precisely Sheikh Raghib Mustafa Ghalwesh imitated the style of Sheikh Mustafa Ismail. Sheikh Raghib Mustafa Ghalwesh visited many countries, including Middle Eastern countries and also European and North American countries. He visited many countries. In 1990, he traveled to Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran. This was the first time that an Egyptian reciter was coming to Iran. Sheikh Raghib Mustafa Ghalwesh along with Sheikh Ahmad Bassiouni, were the first two reciters who visited Iran. And he had some spectacular recitations in Iran. Sheikh Raghib Mustafa Ghalwesh, this great reciter, passed away several years ago. May Allah bless him and reward him. Now let's listen to Surah An-Nasr, recited by Sheikh Raghib Mustafa Ghalwesh. Let's enjoy this recitation.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful. When the victory of Allah has come and the conquest, and you see the people entering into the religion of Allah in multitudes, then exalt him with praise of your Lord and ask forgiveness of him. Indeed, he is ever accepting of repentance.
We give people.
U.S. support for Israel.
The U.S. has been giving the Israeli regime unwavering support from the get-go. Thus, Israel has no greater friend than the United States today. The U.S. has given Tel Aviv billions of dollars in foreign military aid to remain a most strategic ally to the Zionist regime. Here's how they spend the money. Hello and welcome to We the People. I'm your host, Mila Javan Mardi. In this episode, we will delve into decades of U.S. abet.